To Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday morning here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and the deadly myths which are associated with religion and with politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission here is to help you understand what is occurring while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we will engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance, you'll be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Him. Our phone numbers for anyone who would like to participate in this discussion, to add to or to question anything that is said over the next 2 hours, is 877-376-45. So let me ask you a question. When multiple crude bombs packed inside of pressure cookers, which are loaded with nails and metal pellets, are carried in backpacks and placed on a public sidewalk, and they are detonated in succession within 10 to 20 seconds of each other, with the intent of murdering and maiming a gathering of innocent civilians, mostly women and children, and all of whom are wholly unrelated to those who actually have done the bomber harm. What is the likelihood that said bomber is a fundamentalist Muslim killing in Allah's cause? 99.9%. Does that mean that the Boston bomber was a fundamentalist Muslim killing in Allah's cause? Nope. It is, after all, only 99.9%. There is a chance that he is not, or that she is not. But it is this reality that is so troubling to me, that you could have the vast majority of those tasked with investigation. You could have the vast majority of those who speak in the media. You could have the vast majority of those who are political, automatically lean towards the one in a thousand, saying that they think this has the hallmarks of a radical right-wing extremist. When putting together these sets of facts, you would end up with higher than 99.9% of such circumstances as we witnessed in Boston being perpetrated by a fundamentalist Muslim. Every day, someplace around the world, multiple pressure cooker bombs, typically in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, and in Kashmir, comprised, manufactured the same way, loaded with the same kinds of materials, are placed on a public sidewalk, and are detonated with the intent of maiming and murdering women and children. Every day, almost without fail. This kind of bomb is featured on Inspire magazine, which is the internet magazine that is put out by the what's called the Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula, unrelated to the original Al-Qaeda, which is all but extinct. And so why is it that the majority of people who are in positions of either authority or influence are ignoring the obvious? Now, I don't know who did this. I do not claim, not asserting here that a fundamentalist Muslim did it. I'm not in any way here trying to infer that a fundamentalist Muslim did it. What I'm trying to tell you is that if historically 99.9% of bombings that have the hallmarks that we saw here, when they are perpetrated, they are done by fundamentalist Muslims. And that being the case, why are the vast majority of those who have access to the media and politicians and those being interviewed who are part of law enforcement or former government officials all speaking about the 1 in 1,000? That's what I want to know. What's their agenda? What's their motivation? Are they ignorant of the facts? Are they incapable of rational thought? Are they unable to recognize that the way that we ascertain probabilities is by doing this very thing, by saying, all right, these are the circumstances. When we see these circumstances, what is the most common cause? Now, we're not dealing with something here where this is 60-40, 55-45. It's 1,000 to 1. Why is it that the terms that have been used almost exclusively in the media for the last 2.5 days say that they're trying to distinguish between foreign or domestic terrorism? Foreign or domestic terrorism. I mean, what an unbelievably idiotic way to describe the options. You know, it's 9/11. If you want to understand why fundamentalist Muslims flew planes into our buildings on 9/11, you're not going to learn anything to say, well, they were foreign nationals. Therefore, it was an act of foreign terrorism. Or that Oklahoma City, that Nichols and McVeigh were Americans, so it was a domestic act of terrorism. It's not about nationality. It's about motivation. Nichols married a Muslim woman. He spent most of his time being around and in the influence of Islamic fundamentalists in the Philippines prior to the Oklahoma City bombing, mostly with the lieutenants of Ramzi Youssef. So why is that a domestic act of terrorism? And 9/11, it's not their citizenship that matters, it's their religion. This is about Islam in terms of understanding terrorism. That doesn't mean this case was perpetrated by a Muslim, but if you want to understand 99% of terrorist acts today in this vein, where there is a bomb or multiple bombs typically placed in high traffic civilian areas, manufactured like this, detonated like this, the perpetrator is a fundamentalist Muslim. So why don't we call it what it is? The vast majority of terror is perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims. Was this a jihadist act perpetrated by a fundamentalist Muslim, or was this the act of some nutcase who has no association of any kind with Islam? Could it be the 1 in 1,000? But is even the argument being positioned that way? And how you frame an argument is how people come to understand. It's how you go about the process of solving it. These bombs, made just this way, in pressure cookers, packed with the same kind of materials, are used routinely in Islamic countries by fundamentalist Muslims. Now, here's an article. This is today, CNN. Within a day of the Oklahoma City bombing, officials had named their first suspect, Timothy McVeigh. You know, no one wants to talk about Nichols. Nichols spent almost all of his time in direct association with the staff, if you will, of Ramzi Youssef. Ramzi Youssef is the little known but most effective Islamic terrorist of this era. Everyone wants to get Osama bin Laden credit because that makes a nice, neat enemy over there that we can put under the umbrella of Al-Qaeda. But the real mastermind is Ramzi Youssef. Ramzi Youssef is the man who conceived the 9/11 bombing. Ramzi Youssef is the Wonjinka scheme, which was chemical explosives put above, on airplanes. Actually carried out a test of his plan. Nichols was deeply associated with him. Ramzi Youssef is the man most responsible for the initial bombing of the World Trade Center. So, why is it that we don't make the connections with Oklahoma City and Nichols, who spent most of his time prior to the bombing in the Philippines, in the very places where Ramzi Youssef and his lieutenants were recruiting people from around the world and training them to make bombs. And when the bomb of Oklahoma City was manufactured exactly like the manuals that Ramzi Youssef had prepared. Same materials, constructed identically to the manuals that Ramzi Youssef had prepared. Here, this bomb was identical to the manuals the fundamentalist Muslim website Inspire magazine lays out. Why don't we make the connection? Why are we incapable of thinking? Within 2 days of the attack, this article goes on to say, investigators had zeroed in on Al-Qaeda as the perpetrator. Yeah, but it wasn't Al-Qaeda. Just fundamentalist Muslims. That's all they had in common, was they were all fundamentalist Muslims, recruited from various places around the world, financed from various places around the world, carrying out a plan that wasn't Al-Qaeda, that was Ramzi Youssef's. But as loved ones mourns the deaths of three people and dozens of others remain in hospitals from the dual bombings Monday near the finish line of the Boston Marathon, two questions continue to hound authority: who triggered the attack and why? On Wednesday morning, a federal law enforcement source with firsthand knowledge of the investigation told CNN that it led to a pressure cooker thought to be used in the bombings had been found on the roof of the building near the scene. Gee, what was your first clue, Sherlock? While such clues may move the investigation forward, they do not reveal the source of the attack or whether the attack was, once again, domestic or foreign terrorism. So a Muslim that grows up in America, is he a domestic terrorist? The Muslim that we killed in Yemen and his son with the Predator bomb, the American citizen, was he a foreign or domestic terrorist? Why are we even asking that question? Returning to the stories of associated with what happened in Boston. It is sickening that the media almost universally is leaning towards a what they call a domestic terrorist. The fact is that they're even making distinction between international and domestic terrorism as opposed to Islamic terrorism, which is 99% of terrorism perpetrated in the world today, at least on attacks like this. Specifically on attacks like this, you're dealing with 99.9% being Islamic terrorism, and yet they won't even use the term, won't even frame the issue that way. Let me give you this quote, the next line from the article I was sharing with you. Quote, if your experience and expertise is Middle East terrorism, not Islamic terrorism, Middle East terrorism. The terrorism is based on a region, not on a religion. It has the hallmarks of Al-Qaeda or a Middle East group. I mean, can you imagine CNN and how you'd go about twisting things so that the one common denominator motivating 99% of terrorism around the world is Islam, and you can't even say it? And today, for all practical purposes, there are no Al-Qaeda groups. Yes, Al-Qaeda was one of many hundreds, if not thousands, of Islamic terrorist groups back in the day. And there's still a little remnant of the original Al-Qaeda. to two or three other groups that actually borrow on the name, play off the name of Al-Qaeda, have no affinity with the original group at all. The only common denominator is fundamentalist Islam. That's it. And yet, they would say, if your experience and expertise is Middle East terrorism, has the hallmarks of Al-Qaeda, or a Middle East group, as opposed to an Islamic group, former FBI Assistant Director Tom Fuente said, then you will see all the hallmarks of that. Yeah. Every aspect of it fits. Does it mean just because every aspect fits fundamentalist Islamic terrorism, that it was fundamentalist Islamic terrorist who did it? No, not necessarily. It just makes the likelihood 99.9%. That doesn't convict an individual. It just tells you where to look. The article goes on to say, if your experience is domestic groups and bombings that have occurred here, it's hallmarks of a domestic terrorist like Eric Rudolph in the 1996 Atlanta Summer Olympic bombings. They have to go all the way back to him. 1996? One idiot. And it doesn't have those hallmarks. He bombed over a long period of time. He used pipe bombs, not pressure cookers. Here's the quick story on Eric. Robert Rudolph, he was born September 1966. He was known as the Olympic Park bomber. He's responsible for a series of bombings across the southern United States between 1996 and 1998, which killed two people and injured 150 over that period of time. What was his issue? He was a pro-life, anti-gay crusader. Now, just think of how warped you've got to be in your mind that you're pro-life and you think that the best way to advance your pro-life cause is to take life. Anti-gay. Any time that somebody thinks that you should be opposed to homosexuality in the sense of being an anti-gay crusader. Jerry Falwell was one of these, the late Protestant preacher. When that is your agenda, you got something seriously out of kilter. It's just like the people not being able to realize that what they're looking at here 99.9% of the time was committed by a fundamentalist Muslim. You can't make the connection. When God, they think they're speaking for God in opposing homosexuality, God makes a couple of references to it in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, they have a lot to say. Couple of references to it. Didn't make his top 10 list. It's not on the 10 statements. Why would that become your litmus test? Tells you a great deal about the individual that they're a crusader against gays and not a crusader against adultery, which did make the top 10 list. We'll return and I'll share a little bit more about Rudolph, and we'll talk a little bit more about why we have reached this point where we're no longer able to think. As a society, unable to reason. We have become what we have sought, which is to be a politically correct nation incapable of exercising good judgment. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths, I'm your host, Yetta. We're considering America's inability or unwillingness to exercise good judgment. And I want to make this point extraordinarily clear. Just because 999 out of every 1,000 terrorist attacks that follow the circumstances that we know to be certain in Boston occur, where crude bombs, multiple crude bombs, detonate within seconds of each other, that are comprised of pressure cooker devices that are loaded with nails and metal pellets
that are carried in a backpack, placed on a public sidewalk, detonated with the intent of murdering and maiming an innocent gathering of civilians, mostly women and children. When we see that kind of an act, it is perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims at least 999 out of 1,000 times. Now, that does not mean that this one was perpetrated by a fundamentalist Muslim. It just means that if you are asked the question and you are in law enforcement, you're a former government official, you're in the media, and you're reviewing the facts, you ought not be going and saying that, you know, this has all the hallmarks of domestic terrorism. Or you ought not even say, you know, I guess there's a possibility it could be international, and not mention the one common denominator between 99.9% of similar acts and what occurred. You know, if you want a common denominator, there is an interesting common denominator amongst the bombers, too, actually, that would probably incorporate 100% of these nutcases. Maybe not, because you've still got Ted Kaczynski hanging out there as the typical lone wolf. I even find the term lone wolf here absurd, because most terrorist acts are not perpetrated by lone wolves in the sense that they individuals with a unique personal agenda. There's lots of people, for example, that are anti-gay, lots of people that are pro-life, lots of people that think that murdering is the right way to solve their problems. It never is. And we ought not be opposed to people making independent choices. Free will should be sacrosanct. But here's a case with Robert Rudolph. His mommy took him to the Church of Israel compound, which is a cult, which is part of the Christian Identity movement. This guy fashioned himself a Roman Catholic in the war to end the Holocaust of abortions. And he was going to do that by killing. So what do most bombers of this type have in common? They're usually religious. Now, 99.9% of the time, their religion is Islam, but sometimes it's a warped version of Christianity as well. But what do they else they have in common? Well, Rudolph enlisted in the U.S. Army. Remember Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols of Oklahoma City? They also were in the U.S. Army. Nadel Hassan, the terrorist of Fort Hood that killed people while shouting Allahu Akbar, U.S. Army. So are we to blame the U.S. Army and say, boy, that seems to be the common denominator between these fellows, and find out what's wrong with the U.S. Army? Well, maybe. Is there an aspect of the U.S. Army which dehumanizes individuals? Is that not what you have to have, that mindset, to place a bomb? You know, every letter that I've received from someone who's come back from Afghanistan or Iraq, they all say the same thing. We were trained, conditioned, indoctrinated to dehumanize. To see the people of those countries as being subhuman so that we could kill them without guilt. To dehumanize. That's what the military does. It dehumanizes. Is that the common thread? Timothy McVeigh, Terry Nichols, Nadel Hassan, Eric Rudolph. But to just go full circle here, I don't know who killed those people. But I do know that if you aren't able to put the pieces together and to say, under these circumstances, you would be right 99.9% of the time, under this set of circumstances, to think that the likelihood was that it was perpetrated by a fundamentalist Muslim, you'd be right 99.9% of the time. You wouldn't be right every time. But you ought not be telling people that it's a lone wolf and that it has hallmarks of things which it does not. And never mentioning the fact that it has hallmarks of the one thing that is relevant here. Fundamentalist Islam. speaking of fundamentalist Islam and America's destructive patterns of behavior, Kabul, Afghanistan. Let me say one last thing here about what happened in Boston. In addition to Oklahoma City being listed routinely as the great example of domestic terrorism, and there's more evidence linking Ramzi Youssef's group to the Oklahoma City bombing, to the first bombing of the World Trade Center, and to the 9/11 bombings, much more evidence between them and Terry Nichols than there is between Osama bin Laden and 9/11. Much more. But the other thing that was always mentioned is Waco. And the liberals on TV want to accuse right-wing wackos of being responsible for Waco. Right-wing wackos weren't responsible for Waco. Now, I don't want to try to create an illusion that the Branch Davidians were sane. I'm opposed to all religions, and so I'm not going to advocate for them. But the United States government motivation for the assault was them having, I think it was shotguns that didn't comply with the federal standards of what kind of shotgun you could own. So the Branch Davidians in Waco were doing something that they had a constitutional right to do. The federal government wanted to thwart their constitutional right, and so the federal government attacked them. Waco is not an example of right-wing nut jobs. Waco is an example of an out-of-control government. Now moving on, Kabul, Afghanistan. For the third year in a row, opium cultivation has increased across Afghanistan. The report by the United Nations on Drugs and Crime increased concerns among the international law enforcement issue that if the trend continues, opium would be the country's leading economic activity after the departure of foreign military forces in 2014. And that Afghanistan would become the world's first true narco state. Afghanistan is already the world's largest producer of opium, and last year accounted for 75% of the world's heroin supply. Heroin has, since the United States invaded Afghanistan, has become pervasive as a drug. The assumptions are that Afghanistan will be responsible for 90% of the world's heroin this coming year. Now, that was not the case before the United States invaded Afghanistan, but as a consequence of our invasion, Afghanistan now has become the world's dominant producer of opium and of heroin. Congratulations, America. That was an interesting consequence of your invasion. Women whom we sought to liberate, who we constantly show, oh boy, look at those women with the ink-stained fingers who get to vote. Women are treated far worse in Afghanistan now than they were when America invaded. In Iraq, where we said we were invading to have democracy and not have the rule of religion so all different peoples could live together freely. They're almost all no Christians now. They were almost a million of them before we invaded. They've been wiped out. Consequence. Before we invaded Afghanistan, and then Pakistan was considerably more stable with Musharraf as its head than it is now, with fundamentalist Muslims running amok because we pushed them there. Before we invaded Iraq, Iran was struggling to survive, could not develop its nuclear weapon. Now that we've invaded Iraq, they have no more enemy. They control Iraq. Consequence, back to the same topic we were speaking of earlier. This fact that we have turned Afghanistan into a narco state, which is, by the way, what happened in Vietnam and Cambodia when our CIA became involved in both countries. The CIA made money by packing the coffins of American servicemen killed in that war full of drugs. It's how they raise illicit money that they do obnoxious things around the world. The more you know, the more disappointed you are. Now, it's one thing, and let's make this perfectly clear. It's one thing to be aware that your government is doing many things which are counterproductive, like turning Afghanistan into a narcotic state. And you'd say, oh, but that's not fair. You can't say we turn them into a narcotic state. We have all sorts of plans that discourage that. Yeah, well, then why was Afghanistan virtually out of the narcotics business under the Taliban and after the U.S. invasion is the dominant player? Are we that ineffective? If we're that ineffective, why are we there? But just because you know that your government is not trustworthy, which is the entire purpose of this, I don't want people to be dependent on their government. I don't want them to be patriotic. I don't want them to be political. I don't want them to be a lemming, being led off a cliff to their own demise because they have chosen to rally behind or to trust or to respect their government. Just want you to question them. Just want you to realize you should not be relying on them. They are not worthy of your reliance. Walk away from them. That's it. It's all God wants. Turn your back on your government. Don't do what these idiots are doing and attempt to kill people because you're upset. That's stupid. Segment of the news hour of Shattering Myths. There was a terrible earthquake in Iran about a week ago, 6.3 on the Richter scale. The interesting thing about the quake is that it was immediately under the Iranian nuclear production facilities. And then a week later, another earthquake, the following one, the one from 2 days ago, measured 7.8. So we are certainly experiencing birth pangs of earthquakes at the epicenter of what will be a war that will end up spreading across the world as a direct result of Islamic terrorism. It is particularly sad to note with these earthquakes taking place in Iran, that there are two things that are revealed by them. One is that the reason that 32 people died and 850 homes were destroyed by the first quake, which measured 6.3, is because most of the homes in central Iran are comprised of the same material that Mecca was comprised of 1,400 years ago. Mud. Just unbaked clay used to comprise homes. The majority of homes of the backlands of the Wadi of Mecca, where, you know, Mecca was not a place that you would go to in the sense of, wow, there's really something to see here. Even the Kaaba was just a rock pile. And here we have the realization that even today, 1,400 years later, in lands influenced by Islam, people are living in mud. Nothing has changed. The second thing that this brings up is that there's all this discussion about, oh boy, the enlightened, the superior way to deal with the Iranian ambitions for a nuclear bomb is to use sanctions and diplomacy. Well, those haven't worked at all. Iran, in the most recent series of nuclear talks, told the international community to go take a long walk on a short plank, that they would have none of it. And the reason is that that all of these sanctions have no effect because countries around the world are still doing business with Iran. Japan, for example, is buying their oil. And those that don't buy it directly are buying it shipped either through Turkey or through Iraq. And those that don't want to show a paper trail are buying it with gold. Yeah, the reality is that they have not worked, they will not work, and that a world with Iran having a nuclear bomb is a world not unlike the carnage that we saw in Boston, but multiplied a billion times. Another story that tells us about our future, just like our inability to exercise good judgment and make connections and to understand what's actually happening that is being manifest in the media and among politicians relative to the Boston bombing, which is indicative of where we're headed. The world is going to literally come apart at the seams. The people who are responsible for depriving individuals of their wealth and their privacy, their freedoms, however, will not be blamed because the vast majority of Americans no longer think. They can't even frame an issue to the point that they can understand it. They don't know the cause and effect of things. Just as we recognize that America reelected a politician who is doing nothing to prevent Iran from having a bomb that is effective and continues to talk about it because in actuality, I think he would prefer it to occur because he hates Israel to the point that any threat to Israel is fine with him. But here's another example of people not putting the pieces together and understanding how this will influence their lives over the next 10 to 15 years. Remember, the cost of the Cyprus bailout was originally presented as 6% of everyone's savings and 10% of savings and checking accounts over 100,000 euros. And that was just going to be it. Now, first of all, that was pretty extraordinary that the European Union would float the idea of stealing people's money. Well, it's no longer that. And it used to be that they were trying to raise about 9 billion for the 10 billion loan. That's not the case anymore either. Now they're trying to confiscate 23 billion, raping Cyprus of 23 billion, which is more than the entire year's economy for their $10 billion loan. More on that tomorrow.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that most